Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm very excited to have David Karandesh on the show today. For more than 18 years, he has been focused on online advertising, SaaS, and artificial intelligence. Currently, David is founder and CEO of Capacity, an enterprise artificial intelligence SaaS company focused on helping teams do their best work. I am so honored and so privileged to have David Karandesh on the show today. David, thank you so much for making the time. We've tried to get this going for a few months now, and with your travel schedule and my schedule has been difficult, but I am so excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I just want to jump in, though. So talk to us a little bit, David, about how you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up here in the St. Louis area. I was always a very curious kid, doing science experiments, and I remember my favorite movie growing up was Back to the Future, so I always had makeshift DeLoreans in my basement. I connected with technology in high school and started to learn how to code, and it has been a fun adventure ever since.
And I think, am I dreaming this, or did your dad bring home an old computer or something like that? I think Your dad was a catalyst for that, right?
Yeah, so my first computer was actually being thrown away at my dad's work, and he ended up taking it home. And then I ended up learning, at that time, it was Windows programming development, and then eventually the web. But yeah, it really sparked a couple things in me, the ability to create and do that digitally and be able to do that quickly is very fun. But then also a real passion for bridging the digital divide and helping everyone have access to technology.
How old were you when your dad brought that computer home?
Probably about 14, 15, somewhere in there.
Well, then you went on. I know you went on. You graduated from high school, and then you went on to go to WashU at that point, and you got a computer science degree. Is that correct, from WashU?
I got an undergrad, bachelor's in computer science, and a second major in entrepreneurship.
Perfect segue, talking about entrepreneurship. When I think about David Karandesh, I think of you're a serial entrepreneur. So you've had success, but yeah, I know that even before Answers, which I want to talk about Answers a little bit, you had founded a few companies, and I know that all of them were successful, right?
Wrong. Well, it depends on how you define success. They
were
successful from the standpoint of helping to learn, but they weren't all financially successful. A couple of examples. Originally started a web design company where we were building out web pages for people. And at that time, if you could build a website, you were somewhere between a wizard and a warlock in terms of your magical powers.
Yes.
But we realized pretty quickly that doing that type of work, we kept having to go find new clients because when the project was done, the project was over. Pretty soon after that, we ended up working with one of our clients and building out a lead generation website. And that went really well, but it was very, very competitive in the space that we were in. Then we started another business in the online retail space. We were one of the largest resellers of Von Dutch hats online. So those mesh trucker hats that were popular for about 15 minutes.
Right.
We were one of the resellers there. And that led us to actually understand that content could be monetized well on the web. And so we ended up publishing content on our Celebrity Fashions blog. And then graduated, ended up taking a little detour, went on the Martha Stewart Apprentice. So I did not get to meet our fabled president. I don't know if that is a bug or a feature. We can talk about that another time. And then came back and with my business partner and best friend, Chris, we ended up starting company called Find Stuff that ultimately became Answers.com.
So, and you mentioned Chris, he was your best friend, and you did all of these ventures with him. Is that right, David?
Yeah, we've been working together since juniors in high school.
Oh, wow. What is it about the two of you that make you better together?
I think when you're looking for a co-founder, it's really important that you find someone who has shared values and at the same time, complementary skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I was more of the outside guy doing sales, raising capital. Chris was more of the inside guy doing more internal work, more mm-hmm. marketing. But we had it, yeah, we've just had a great partnership through the years. It changes over time, but no, it's been a great friendship and a great partnership.
That's wonderful. Well, if everybody could just find somebody like that, right? That's complimentary. So you mentioned Answers. This was a major success for you guys. I mean, I'm sure people know about it, but if they don't, talk to us about what it is and then the life event that happened for you guys.
Going back to 2006, we had started originally a comparison shopping engine called Find Stuff. And part of the way that we built it out is we ended up partnering with a lot of our competitors. So we had a partnership with Yahoo Shopping and Shopzilla and Shopping.com at the time. And as we started to build and grow, we developed a marketing platform that would attract users to our website who could then find what they were looking for. So we built that and we started to take off pretty quickly. But then over time, we started to verticalize and build out new properties in different categories. So we had an auto website and a health website and a travel website. But we needed content that would work in all the categories that we were in. So we were out originally cutting deals with all the different content providers to syndicate their content to us. And that's when we had the idea of saying, what if we could place a question and answer module on these websites? Has a lot of value to the user, has a lot of value to the advertiser, and it's got a lot of value to the search engine because you get a lot of unique content. So one of our developers built a little Q&A module that we started applying to our sites. Pretty soon we had a few thousand questions and answers going. That's when we said, you know, I wonder if there's a website out there that has a lot of organic traffic, a lot of questions and answers, something that could fit well with the model we were in. So we went out and bought Answers.com. It was a public company at the time based in Jerusalem. It was an international take private, turnaround, debt finance, first acquisition. So nice and easy. So we acquire the company. We move the headquarters to St. Louis. Within 90 days, Google makes an algorithm change. And our $127 million acquisition went unprofitable. And then we had to go scrape and scratch and claw our way back to profitability. We eventually grew it to over $250 million in revenue and sold it to a private equity firm.
For a lot of money.
It was a good exit.
It was a very good exit. See, I had not heard that story, that you, in 90 days, you went unprofitable. That had to have rocked you a little bit. What were the qualities, David, that you had to pull out at that time to keep going?
One of the things that we learned early on is that you can build a business very quickly if you partner with another provider like a Yahoo or a Google. But when they sneeze, you catch a cold. And if they catch a cold, you catch the plague.
Right.
And so one of the things we realized, and this will segue into what we're doing today, but one of the things we realized early on is that these partnerships can give you a great way to get started. But if you don't diversify, they can be a challenge down the road when things change. From the standpoint of what do you need to get through that time, I think there's definitely some resilience. Everyone talks about grit these days.
Yes.
But I also think there's a recognition that as important as your work is, it's not the ultimate thing. And so being able to work really hard and come up with creative solutions to bob and weave and pivot is just as important as making sure that you don't put everything in your work as well.
So if it's not everything, what are those things that are everything?
You know, in my life, it's my faith, my family, my wife, and my kids, and then I'd put work as number three. Now, keeping that in order is not always easy.
Can be a challenge.
Especially as a startup entrepreneur, but that's what I strive to do.
Very good. I love that. Well, I do want to talk about what you're doing today. You guys are on to something that can change the way work is done. So talk to us about that journey.
After selling Answers, I took some time off. I wanted to figure out what I wanted to do mm-hmm. next. My wife and I went up to Montana, saw some moose, took the kids up there, kind of came down from the mountain with this idea around what if we could make a better workplace. At that time, Christmas of 2016, the top selling item on Amazon wasn't a doll or a CD or a movie or some kind of other electronic item. It was Amazon's Alexa. And it was the first time in the history of the world where an AI was the top selling item. And I looked at it and said, what if you could have an Alexa for the workplace or Siri for the office? And that was the idea that led us to go start what we ultimately renamed its Capacity. The thing that got me so excited about building a better workplace is I knew personally what it's like to communicate with people across multiple offices, multiple locations, people not knowing basic information. And so we set off with this idea of being able to say, what if we could take all of your company intelligence, make it accessible in one place where you ask your question in natural language and get a response back? So that's what we've been building. We've been at it about 2.5 years, signed a couple dozen clients, a lot in the financial services space, specifically around this idea of connecting all of your company intelligence and making it accessible via natural language.
Right. And I know that you have said that studies show 30% of productive time is wasted trying to find information.
Yeah, it's about a third of your workday is wasted looking for information.
And that's what you guys are trying to eliminate.
That's what we're trying to get rid of.
Yeah, you're trying to subtract so you can add.
But nobody likes looking for, I've never met anyone who's like, you know what, I really like diving in our 50-page employee handbook to try to find the answer to something. Or I really like poking around on our intranet and spending an hour trying to find an answer to my question. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody mm-hmm. likes that.
So, David, dig into this a little bit further. You say that there are three places that information lives in an organization.
Yes. The three places where your company intelligence lives, it's your apps, your documents, and the minds of your team. So we've built out connectors to over 50 different apps. We've got some technology that we just submitted a patent on around mining information out of your documents. And then we are helping to organize the knowledge of your team so that you can ask Capacity a question and get an instant response back. Now, one of the things that we've learned over time is that no matter how great your AI is, if you have a question that's going to be outside of the bounds of the knowledge base or something that maybe just too complicated to answer today, you need to be able to gracefully move from that level zero support up to level one support. So in our support automation suite, if you will, we've got our knowledge base that connects to those three places. We've also got a help desk where if you ask Capacity a question, and it doesn't know the answer, it will route it to our Copilot console help desk. Then one of your team members can raise their hand and say, I know the answer to that. That then becomes part of the knowledge base going forward. And then the last piece we've really been working on most recently is this idea around automating your processes. So if you think about the onboarding process, when you bring a new team member on, they're going to have all sorts of ad hoc questions that go along the way, and you can answer those via your chatbot. But also, you're going to go through a series of steps to onboard that new team member, whether it's signing the offer letter, to filling out the insurance paperwork, to scheduling the one-on-one with their manager. Our concept is that we want to take as many of those steps as possible, create a digital representation of that process, and over time, instead of assigning those tasks to people, you can actually assign many of those tasks directly to the Capacity bot. In that case, you're creating a faster, better onboarding experience for both your ad hoc questions as well as your standardized processes.
Very good. Well, I have more questions, but we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with David Karandash.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals. So if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
So David, with Capacity, you did not start with a huge team or anything like that. There are maybe entrepreneurs that are listening right now or entrepreneurial-minded people that are listening, and then they're like, well, I have an idea, but I don't even know how to get started. You know, so talk about that journey and how you guys kind of bootstrapped.
So when we started out, we wanted to make sure that we were onto something before we went and took any outside capital. So we built a minimally viable product, or MVP, as people like to call it, that could demonstrate the power of the technology and give people something to stare at, try out, play with, to understand, like, could this be something that we'd be willing to pay for? So before we ever raised any outside capital, we said, we want to build the product. We want to get it in the hands of our first customer within 6 months of launching. We want to get a few customers that first year just to prove the concept out, and then we can go to market and go raise the capital that we need. What that allowed us to do is it ensured that we had not just a good idea, but we had the makings of a good business. It also ensured that we got that early feedback that could inform the product without just building something in a lab and then waiting for people to show up.
Mm-hmm. So important, isn't it? Because I'm sure that as these beta clients were using the product, they had feedback.
Oh, absolutely.
And you could adjust and pivot and make the product just better and more relevant.
Anyone who will eat your first pancake is someone that will help your restaurant get better.
Yeah, I like that. I love that. I've not heard that before. So I do consider you a serial entrepreneur. This is not your first rodeo. And I'm sure that you've learned a few things along the way. And I know that one of the questions is always people, you've got four little kids, right? Eight and under. Is
Eight,
that right?
Six, four, and two.
Yeah. You've got four little kids. You've got a wife. You're starting this business. What are some of those things that you would tell people?
Yeah. So in my last business, I worked a lot. And I work a lot at capacity. But one of the things I've really tried to do is to set consistent hours. So like, for example, Monday night is my work late night. So I'll get in the office in the morning, come home, eat dinner with my family, and then I'll work until 10:30 or so. Tuesday night, my wife and I have a midweek date night. It's nice because you can get in pretty much anywhere in St. Louis on a
yes.
Tuesday night.
that's a good hack.
And it also means that we're not waiting till the end of the weekend when we're all just exhausted to catch up. Wednesday night, we do a work late at the office. We'll bring in pizza or tacos or something, and it's a time to work with the rest of the team on more projects that you can't just get done in a 30-minute time frame mm-hmm. or sort of thing. Thursday night, come home a reasonable hour, spend time with the kids. Either Friday or Saturday, one night we're out with friends, one night we're staying in, and then I try to take a 24-hour Sabbath from Saturday afternoon to Sunday afternoon. And for me, email is the gateway drug of work, and so the email Sabbath, if I don't check email and I don't check Slack, then I can do a better job of unplugging. Now, easier said than done in a world where you get constantly inundated with notifications
pinged.
And pings.
Sure.
So I turned off notifications for Slack and email on my phone as an example. Yeah, I found that getting that just 24 hours of rest is so crucial. I don't think I'm working any less. I think I'm working about the same amount that I did before. But I feel much more rested. I feel much better.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do in that 24-hour period?
In this phase of life, I'm doing a lot of chasing kids around. So soccer games and tag and that sort of thing. I usually try to get a nap on Sunday afternoon right after church. Sometimes we'll cook. Sometimes we'll take my kids out for lunch, things that help me recharge.
Do you guys get outside in nature a lot?
Yeah,
you had mentioned Montana earlier.
We try to get out as much as we can. Our kids are very active. My father-in-law and I are on the tail end of wrapping up building a treehouse, which has been quite a project. So the kids have really enjoyed that.
That's awesome. So you've got to send us pictures when
yeah,
the treehouse is finished.
I will.
Is it elaborate? Is it multi-level?
No,
these treehouses you could live in.
I had grand ambitions until we started the project. No, but it's a great treehouse for our kids.
The kids will love that. So how important is it to take care of your health?
Oh, it's so important because when you aren't healthy, your ability to make good decisions drops dramatically. You know, health is rest, health is eating well, health is exercise, health is things that fill your bucket, health is time with your family and time in your faith. I started doing something where I eat a salad breakfast each day with some protein. And then I try to do intermittent fasting where I go about 12 hours or so without eating. And that has really helped me to not put on those extra pounds along the way.
Yeah, someone was in my office probably a couple of weeks ago and was talking to me about intermittent fasting and just how radically different his body felt in doing that. It's a healthy thing to do, right?
I don't think people were designed to be snacking every hour.
Right, exactly. I want to touch on this and then I want to get into something extra. You talk about a movie that had inspired you, had got you thinking a little bit differently a long time ago. And you mentioned at the beginning of the episode that you are a Christian, that your faith is very important to you. And what you hear a lot of times, David, is that, well, that's on the weekends, that's on a Sunday. Are those compartmentalized? So you have your what you do with your faith and then what you do with your business. How have you seen that integrate?
I think there's a false dichotomy that a lot of people think through. I'd say some people outside of the church world that see faith is something you do on the weekends, that sort of thing. I think I see another viewpoint of folks who are in the church world who might view more directly tied to faith activities like missionary work as being a higher calling than what quote-unquote secular work. I tend to think that that distinction is not correct. I think we're made to whatever we do well, do it to the Lord, and enjoy the time that we have. And so Chariots of Fire movie, that scene where, you know, he says, I run because when I run, I feel God's pleasure, even though he could have gone off to do his missionary work. I think when I'm able to create in the business world, but create in general, I also feel God's pleasure. And mm-hmm. so I don't like to make a big distinction between the sacred, quote unquote, and the secular.
Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, your faith drives how you live
yeah.
and how you work, right?
Absolutely.
So this is something extra. And I want you to talk a little bit about a something extra that you've seen in a team member.
We just hired a new head of product. His name's Mike Hunnigan. And I worked with Mike for many years. We used to work together at Answers. And then after I left, and he had stuck around for a while, we just got recently reunited. And the thing I love about Mike is he has three qualities that are so rare on their own, but when combined, they're like a superpower. It's high talent, low ego, and high hustle. You find many very talented people that have big egos. You're going to find low ego people who don't hustle. And you can find people with a lot of hustle, but they just don't have the talent to back it up. When those three superpowers combine, you end up with just an extraordinary team member.
Wow, that is powerful, isn't it? Because people that have the smarts but then have the high ego, it's just not much fun. Be around those people, right?
Yeah. No. And life's too short to work with people with too big of egos.
Absolutely. Yeah, we always say there's always somebody smarter than you are, you know. So can you tell a story about where something possibly was missing in you?
Yeah, so when I had started Find Stuff, which became Announced Media, which became Answers, when I was 22 and single, I didn't have a lot of respect for the whole work-life balance stuff. I didn't have kids. I wasn't married. Now, starting Capacity with four kids, I have a lot more in tune to wanting people to be able to spend time with their families. At the same time, my views on work-life balance have evolved where I don't view it as a balance in the sense of you have a balance beam and you just put work on one side and you put family time on the other and you make sure that they even out. I really like to think of it in terms of work-life wholeness. So when I'm at work, I want to be 2 feet in, working as hard as I possibly mm-hmm. can. And when I'm with my family, I want to be with my family and not constantly checking emails and Slack and doing work on the side. And so I think I've kind of come full circle from work being, you know, one of the highest on the list to now saying, no, go and work hard, but be wholly in whatever you do.
I love that. Well, you're setting a great example for your children.
And doing the best I can. Yeah, my wife really sets the best example. I'm in her shadow.
Well, it's good to have that good partner, isn't it, David? Yes. You know, I think your kids, they'll remember, you know, that dad, because you hear that so many times. It's like my dad was never around. We didn't have a relationship with my dad because he was working all the time. You know, you do need to work hard. I mean, there is no doubt about it. I always say any success, make no doubt. It's hard work, you know, and it requires that. Like you said before, it's not everything. Very good. So what do you believe is something extra every leader needs?
Every leader needs to be able to take the rest that they need. We talked about that a little bit earlier. The second thing I'd say, though, is that every leader needs to set goals and to measure how they are doing against those goals. I don't mm-hmm. care if they're big take over the world goals or small incremental goals. The ability to set, track, and measure goals, I think is one of the key traits of a leader.
And to set that example for the people that are following them, right?
Exactly.
Very good. I love that. Great advice. So tell me something that you're excited about and that you want our listeners to know about, and then how, if they're interested, how can they get connected?
So a couple of years ago, I got approached by a buddy of mine, Darren Jackson, and he said, David, got this after-school program. We're teaching kids karate and life skills and all these different things. And there's a coding element to it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And he's like, yeah, would you like to help support? I'd like to grow this thing out. You know, I don't really know much about karate and my life skills. I'm still developing my own life skills. So
right.
But teaching kids computer science, I think that could really be something. We brainstormed on what it could look like to start a nonprofit specifically focused around teaching kids computer science. And originally I said, there's so many nonprofits here in St. Louis. We're one of the biggest nonprofit densities per capita. Do we really need another nonprofit? And we thought about it. And we're like, you know, if we could build a business model where we can have this thing scale, and yes, people can donate to it, and yes, we can get corporate sponsorships, but there's a bit of a business model built in, then we don't have to join the gala circuit of all the other fabulous nonprofits here in St. Louis. So we ended up working through a one-for-one model where for every one kid who pays to be a part of the program, we provide a scholarship for one kid who couldn't afford to be there. We've had kids from Clayton and Ladue, and we've had kids from Northside, Ferguson, et cetera. The other thing that we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that this wasn't a program that was a after-school glorified babysitting club.
Sure.
And so we hired an executive director, Sharia Dunlap, who's doing fantastic work, and she helped adapt WashU's CS131 course down for the kids. And so our kids are learning collegiate-level computer science, but in a way that is attractive to them mm-hmm. in the form of fun, which is the best form of learning. So kids might be learning a computer science concept and then applying it in their Flappy Birds clone game. Or they might be setting up an Amazon web server to go apply something that they learned. We've even got a couple kids who started their own web business out of the program itself. If you're interested in either volunteering for Create-A-Loop, putting your kids through Create-A-Loop, or corporate sponsorships, just check us out at createaloop.org. I'm super passionate about this. I believe that no matter where you live, no matter what your socioeconomic background is, you should have access to computer science education.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have said that you feel like our state should require that, right? And we did just pass something where a computer science class can count, I believe, as one of the math courses that you're supposed to take. But it's
baby steps.
Baby steps. It would be awesome, though, if it was a requirement.
In the UK, you cannot graduate from the fifth grade without taking a year of computer science. I always like to joke around. Unfortunately, I wish I didn't have to say this, but our kids learn more about stalactites and stalagmites than they do about building apps, mm-hmm. which to me is crazy in 2019.
Yeah, because every job, every role has a component, doesn't it, David?
Exactly. And I'm not saying that everyone is going to turn into a programmer.
Right, right.
But if you understand how the technology works, your ability to have a great career in the next economy skyrockets. If you mm-hmm. don't understand how technology works, it's going to be very difficult to work in an automating environment.
Well, let's continue to work on that and continue to push the needle.
Yes, thank you.
Well, David, this has just been such a pleasure having you. Oh, my goodness. I could sit here for hours and just talk about life and talk about entrepreneurship and all those things. But thank you so much for being here. I really do appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.